As always, I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be before you all, sharing just some of the things I've been studying over the past couple weeks. It's always a good opportunity for me to get up here and share those things with you. I always enjoy it. If you all, I have a little story I want to talk through first, but if you want to be turning to James chapter 4, that's where we're going to be for most of today. James chapter 4. And I'll meet you over there in just a second. James chapter 4. I'm going to try a new approach also, kind of staying in one passage, so we'll see how that goes today. It's on page 1891 in the Pew Bibles, James chapter 4. So, since I was very young, I've been interested in business and finding different ways to make money. That's always something that's caught my attention, and I've loved any opportunity I have around that. When I was in a sophomore in high school, this manifested itself in an interesting way. I wasn't quite to the point of driving yet, but, you know, I was hanging out with friends at this point. Some of my other friends had their license, and, like, money, you know, was kind of different than it had been before for me. You know, it was, I'd always gotten an allowance, and I saved some of that. I might save up and buy some things I wanted, but now I was going out, and, like, we'd go to McDonald's or something, and you'd need money to buy food, and there were times that I wanted money. So the school I went to, like I said, I was a sophomore there, and they recently stopped selling sodas out of the vending machines. This was part of a new health push that we were having at the school. And so to me, in my mind, I said, hey, most students are upset about this. This is an opportunity. So it's a classic case of demand being high and supply being low. I can take hold of this. So I did some research at the time, as much as research as I knew how to put into it, about what it took to resell sodas and where I could buy them from for the cheapest, and how I could resell them legally. And I put together a plan where I could make a 50-cent profit on each soda that I sold. So I worked out a deal with my parents to get those sodas since I couldn't drive yet. And I even rented out one of my friend's empty lockers for $5 a week to keep the sodas cool, because I wanted to keep my customers happy. I bought some cheap ice packs, and I was all ready to start making money. So first day I get ready, I pack 25 sodas, thinking to myself, $12.50. If I sell all of these, that's a lot of money to make in one day. And I was really excited about it, so I said, hopefully I can sell them all. I carried in my black Nike bag that I've still got to this day, that I used to take to the gym, but now it had an even more exciting purpose. And we would go to the gym in the morning to wait for school to start. And by the time I got to my first class, I already sold 20 of the 25 sodas, and I was like, this is going to be a good day. So I was ecstatic. Sold the rest in the first class. Every day I sold more and more. And looking back, I think I made somewhere around 100 or 150 bucks in profit in the first week. And I was just like, man, this is great. So I made sure to only sell the sodas before classes. You know, back then I didn't hardly ever get in trouble, so I wanted to make sure everything was by the book. And I made sure to not disrupt class. And so business started booming so much I had to hire help. And I got I got one of my buddies to start with me, and we expanded to selling salty snacks. We stole the idea from the movie theater where, like, people are hungry, they want to buy crackers. And so we started selling more sodas, and, like, I was starting this empire, and I just loved it. And, you know, I was making good money. And then, you know, like I said, I was a pretty good kid most of the time. So I was surprised one day when the principal stopped me in the hallway, and he was like, hey, you know, can we go to my office and talk? And so, of course, I'm really scared, like, what's going on here? And so he sat me down and he talked about, you know, he knew what had been going on. I wasn't particularly trying to hide it or anything. The teachers knew about it. He said he was impressed, but he asked me to stop. He said, this is kind of going against the whole health initiative that we're trying to do here, what you're doing. And he didn't have any specific rules that he could get on to me about at the time, but he was like, I just appreciate it if you'd consider, you know, after this conversation, stopping selling these. And this was something I hadn't dealt with before in life, you know, an authority figure that was asking me to do something, but not because I was going against the rules, just because they were asking me to do something like that. And so I had to think for a second, and I was like, okay, yeah, unfortunately, I guess I will stop. I'll listen to this. You know, I've got my parents are here today. I'd had tons of opportunities where they had told me to do something and I had to do it because I was in the wrong. You know, I was doing something I shouldn't have been doing. But this was the first time where it was like, I'm not really doing anything wrong, but somebody in the authority has asked me to not do what I've been doing. And so after I agreed to it, you know, I was kind of sad, wasn't making money like I had before. But that's what I want us to think about today, is what is submission? What is taking that when someone in authority, especially as we'll be looking at it today, when God tells us to do things, how do we submit ourselves to him? How are we listening to what he says, even in cases where maybe we don't fully understand why he's asking us to do what he's asking us to do? And this involves a lot of things. We have to ignore our own desires to be able to follow him and be able to submit to him entirely. And I think that's something that a lot of us probably struggle with is, you know, we have these things that we want to do in life, these things that we want to accomplish. And so that's where we'll pick up in James chapter 4. I'll begin by reading verses 1 through 4, if you'd like to join with me. James chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. And James is writing to early New Testament Christians here who are going through a lot of struggles. So here he says, "What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, so that you may spend it on your pleasures. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." So like I said, James is writing to early Christians who are facing a lot of struggles at this point that, you know, might add to the challenges that we have today of submitting to God and submitting our lives fully to them. They were fighting between each other, and I think this becomes even easier to do when you're facing a lot of different stresses, you know. So they have, they've been dealing with the Romans and all the oppression there. And also something interesting I was thinking about as I was studying through this is when you've got a lot of new Christians, I know there are opportunities today where we kind of let each other down. And so, like, the trust might not be as high as it could be. And so that was probably happening a lot here. You have a lot of people who are new to Christianity, a lot of people from different walks of life. And we can just imagine today how much that breaks our trust when we've asked somebody to do something or we're expecting somebody to help in some way and they don't and they let us down. So you've got all these things stirring around. And so we can see how it'd be easy for people to fight with each other. And then the thing that we definitely deal with today in the very same way as we have our own desires, that, you know, it mentions in verse 1 that we want to take care of ourselves and stick out for ourselves and do what'll be better for us. So, you know, from the time we're very young here in the U.S., we're told to do, you know, follow our dreams and do what makes us happy. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but it kind of grows us up in this culture where we're taught you can do whatever makes you happy. Give in to those desires at any point. As long as it doesn't mess with anybody else, you're fine to do what you want. But that's very different for us as Christians. We can't always just do what we want. It gets really easy if somebody gets that cool new job or a promotion at a job that we really wanted, or like come up driving this brand new car and you're like, man, I really want that car. Or they have a nice, beautiful home. You know, there's all sorts of ways that we can be jealous of other people. Because these could potentially be things that we've been working for years. And to us, it may just look like, well, this person looked into that. I always used to say that my brother looked into everything and that I didn't. And so that's kind of where that attitude comes from me. And so we can really struggle with this point of making sure that we're focused and submitting to God versus having these desires ourselves. So kind of the first point I want to make here in these first four verses is that, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in our lives if we aren't submitted to God, if we aren't fully submitting ourselves to God. We can have all these conflicts and different things like that. You know, and as we go through, we see some of the things that they were facing. They were committing murder. They were envious of each other, as we just mentioned. And so this was a huge struggle for them. So, you know, and we'll talk more about how to fight these temptations. But we also see in verse 3 that they were asking, or I guess in verse 2, they didn't ask for the things that they needed. So they weren't asking of God what they needed. And I think that's something that can happen to us when we're completely focused on our desires. We don't ask God for what we need, you know, because we're so focused on, I want this new home, I want this new thing. But then in verse 3, we see it kind of get even worse. They start to ask and not receive because they're asking with the wrong motives. And I think that that's, you know, a trap that we can fall into as well. If we continually focus on our desires and getting what we want and we're not submitting to God, then, you know, we won't ask with the right motives. We might be asking God for things that will bless us physically and bless our lives and help us to be happier, but we're not focused on the spiritual things, you know. And that, there are a lot of cases where we do pray for like how we're feeling and different things like that, and there's no problem with that. If you're struggling with the loss of a loved one or you're struggling with being lonely, you do need that strength from God to continue on your Christian walk. But on the other hand, our motive can sometimes be asking you know, for things because we're not fully submitting to God. We're not looking at that bigger picture of getting to heaven and helping other people get to heaven. We're focused on what we want, and we're upset because people do something a different way than we do. And then when our motives become wrong, it all goes downhill from here. We can probably see a distinct difference when we deal with people in our lives who, you know, have the right motives, and they mess up, and they continually mess up, but they keep trying to do better, right? And that's what we want to be as Christians. We want to get to the point where we don't mess up as much, but we at least want to have the right motives and continue to do that. But when our motives are wrong, or when we see people with motives who are wrong, it's pretty clear to know that they just, you know, simply don't care anymore. Like, their motivation in life is, I don't really need to get any better. I just need to look out for ourselves or myself. And we want to make sure that we don't get to that point. In verse 4, you know, we see that whoever makes a friend of the world or wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy to God. And so here, if we do choose to do that, if we do choose to submit to the world, we're submitting to Satan, right? Like, we're doing exactly what he wants, and we're not submitting to God. And so that's not a place that we want to be in. Clearly, we don't want to be in this boat. So now, moving on to the next point, how do we make sure, or what does it look like to submit to God, and why would we want to do that? So I'll read verses 5 through 8 if you want to follow along with me. Or do you think that the Scripture speaks to no purpose? He jealously desires the Spirit, which he has made to dwell in us, but he gives us a greater grace. Therefore it says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. So in verse 5, we get kind of a glimpse into why God wants us to submit to him. It's not just so that he can be an authority over us and that he wants to lord over us and tell us exactly what to do. It's because he created us and he knows what's best for us. He longs for our spirit to be close to him. I'm sure most parents in the room understand that it's not about that authoritative position and just being able to tell your kids, you're going to do this because I said so, and you're going to do this because I said so. I didn't always think that was the case living at home, but you know, I think I can look back and see that now. I don't have that experience, though, so I'll talk about an experience that I do have. So over the past 2 years at Epic, I've been managing a team of developers. I've really enjoyed it, but I think one of the things I had to learn very on is that, like, sometimes you do have to discipline people and work with them to get better at things so that you can make sure that they're successful. And it's hard to tell people that that you care about, either at work or in your family, that they aren't doing things right. And so this is kind of talking about when people are submitting to you, there are some responsibilities there as well to make sure that you're looking out for people to do the best that they can, helping them to see and act on what will make them a better person. It's really a driving factor in the role of the person in authority, or should be, to anyone who's going to have a healthy relationship. And that's our relationship with God when we submit to him. He's looking out for our best interests. And he loves us so much more even than we as parents can love our kids or at work or wherever we might have those relationships. Submitting to him is giving him our soul to him, which is what we see here in verse 5. Matthew 22, verse 37 tells us to love the Lord God with all of our souls and all of our minds. And this is what submitting to him is: listening when we don't agree or understand the why behind everything he asks us, and submitting when it goes against our own desires. Because unlike those other two examples, he created us, and he knows exactly how we think. He knows what is best for us, so he can help us to get to those points, even at the times when we're in the thick of it and we don't exactly understand why. So that's one of the huge benefits to submitting to him and him wanting us to be close to him. Also, we see in verse 6 that he'll give us grace. He'll give us those things that we don't deserve, the most important being salvation if we submit to him. We have his favor when we're humble and not being proud. So we do see that we need to be humble and not proud to submit to God. This means realizing that we can't accomplish absolutely everything on our own, and knowing that we do need him to help carry us through life. In verse 7, we see that we need to submit to God. It directly tells us that there, and that's the opposite of what we talked about before, where we're following our own desires. And it will cause, if we resist the devil and we're not giving in to our desires, he will flee from us. Now, how do we do this? How do we overcome our desires? I know we've talked about this some in the past, so I haven't spent a lot of time on it, but we need to fill our minds with spiritual things and stop putting those temptations in front of us that will allow us to be drawn away. Truly submitting to God is spending our time in His Word and spending time with Him so that we can resist these temptations. And then in verse 8, we also see that if we draw near to God, He will draw near to us. And this doesn't mean, because I've even used the illustration up here before that, God doesn't really move and we choose if we want to be close or not to Him. But this fits right in line with that. It's not that God walks away from us necessarily when we don't follow Him. It's just that we're walking away from Him. So the closer we draw to God, the closer He'll be to us. And we need to wash ourselves of that sin and quit doing the things that we shouldn't be, as we see here in verse 8. Purify our hearts by doing those things that we should, focusing on what God says to us and submitting our lives fully to Him. So now, we've talked through what, the problem is with not submitting to God, some of the things that we will face in our lives if we don't submit to God. And it's not an exhaustive list of the negatives, but we've gone through that. We've also talked about a little bit about what submission looks like and why we should do it. So now, what will it actually look like in our lives if we do that? I thought verse 9 was very interesting. As we move down and I'll read verses 9 through 12, it says, "Be miserable and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and He will exalt you. Do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you who judge your neighbor?" So we see here in verse 9, we're supposed to grieve, mourn, and wail if we're submitted to God, which is interesting because, as Christians, a lot of times some of the draw is that, we can be joyous and we can be happy. But, if I'm sitting here thinking, following God will bring me joy, why would I want to be upset and mourn and wail? This is how we get to that point of submitting, right? If we're doing those things that are wrong and we're happy in those at the current time, we are going to be sad and we're going to need to grieve and we're going to need to turn towards God. In cases where people truly turn their lives around, there is some outward reflection of it, right? We see their behaviors change, or when we change our lives, we see our behaviors change. Sometimes there's sadness, sometimes it's just a complete 180 and we see people behaving differently. And this over time will take us from a place where we have so many highs and lows to a consistent joy of being in the presence of God. There's that peace that being with God and close to God gives us that's very different than when something good happens and we're really happy and something bad happens and we're really sad. Not to say that that won't still happen, but this is also not easy to achieve, but it's what we should strive for. But this doesn't mean that we'll constantly be happy either once we reach that point, because Jesus faced times where He wasn't happy. There were multiple occasions of that. It does, however, mean that, like I said, we can feel that peace and comfort knowing where our home is and having the ability to trust who we're serving. Verse 10 reminds us that we do need to be humble to submit ourselves to God. He will take care of promoting and lifting us up. This again kind of takes me back to that work example I was giving before. The people I enjoy working with the most are not those who are kind of braggy and the best employees in the world. It's those people who work hard and, they don't need recognition for it, but then, I can choose to give them recognition if they do need it. And that's how we should be as Christians. We shouldn't be doing things looking for that recognition so we'll feel good. We should just be happy, if people do recognize what we're doing and that helps to promote God's glory, then that should be good enough for us. And so that's where humility comes in, is that we are serving God. We're submitting ourselves to God. And we don't need recognition for that. And then in verses 11 and 12, we see that we don't need to be judging other people either, because God will take care of judging others. We might have been judging people in the past before we submitted ourselves to God, but God is the ultimate judge and lawgiver, and He can discern between specific situations and see what the right way to handle them is. So keeping that in mind, we don't need to be so concerned with every detail of everyone's lives and what's going on with them if we're submitted to God. We only need to help our Christian brothers and sisters to grow spiritually and focus on those things that are right. So that's the passage I wanted to look through. And I, before we kind of move on to concluding this lesson this morning, I wanted to give you some examples of submission that you can go look into, you know, later throughout this week as you challenge yourself to submit more fully to God. I'd encourage you to take these, note of these verses as I quickly mention them. Acts chapter 20, verses 17 through 31 is an example of how elders should watch over the flock and their authority and some of their responsibilities that they have. Kind of back to that example I talked about before, where when we're submitting to people in authority, there are some responsibilities for them as well. And then Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17 tells us of how we are to submit to them as they watch over the us and hopefully help make their jobs a little bit easier. Also, 1 Corinthians 14, 34 through 37, and 1 Timothy 2, 11 through 12 talk about women's role in the church and submitting. So, those are good verses for both men and women to read, because we, you know, as men who are maybe performing things in church or teaching God's word, need to make sure that we're setting a good example, and also women fulfilling their roles in the church. And then lastly, Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 23 talks about wives submitting to their husbands. And the same kind of thing about, there's a relationship there about the wives submitting to husbands and how that relationship should work on each side. So I challenge you all to read that as well as I'll be doing, to kind of think about how we can submit more fully and build those closer relationships. So as we close out our study of James chapter 4 today, I'd like to challenge everyone here to think about if you've submitted yourself to God. How fully have you submitted yourself to God? Are you living your life for Him? What areas can you improve? Our willingness to submit to God's authority directly coincides with our faith in Him. It is through that faith we can gain victory over temptation and those desires of the world. Where do we stand in this regard? Do we have enough faith to do what God tells us? Do we have enough faith to submit to Him fully and do what we're supposed to be doing? So today you have the opportunity to submit yourself fully to God by confessing that Jesus is the Son of God and being baptized for the remission of sins if you haven't done that. If you're already a Christian and need prayers or need to repent because of the way you haven't been fully submitting to God, please come forward as we stand and sing this song of invitation.